This time last week on May 3rd, news broke that Texas Longhorn legend Lance Blanks had passed away at the age of 56. Blanks, known for being part of the BMW scoring machine in the 89 and 1990 season, took Texas to the Elite Eight in 1990, currently holds the record for the highest number of points by a two-year player and is the eighth leading scorer in Texas history, ended his career the all-time leader in steals and fourth in career scoring average, averaging 20 points per game, a Longhorn legend in his own right.
Yeah, Gerald, reading his daughter's ESPN piece about her father was tough. It took me a while to get through it. I had to stop at a couple various different points with just tears streaking my face. I can only imagine the way his two daughters, his loving family and friends are feeling right now. I knew his daughter just tangentially, you know, through people who knew her, social media, whatever. So the people who actually knew the family, it's been pretty universal in their reverence for Lance and their you know, utter shock and sadness at the situation. TJ Ford, Eric Metcalf, people who were mentored by, friends with, peers of Lance, seemed to be rocked to their core. Many UT fans remembering Blanks as kind of the first superstar, and as much as TJ Ford did for the basketball team, Blanks did to change the tenor of the program, along with that BMW offense that really made Texas basketball relevant after wandering in the abyss for many years. He went on to you know, have a career drafted in the first round of the NBA, played overseas, was a front office guy and for multiple NBA franchises, including the Suns and the Spurs. Steve Kerr opened his press conference when he heard the news, just saying it's an absolutely terrible day. Was a coworker and friend in two of those organizations with Blanks. Really tremendous friend of Rodney Terry's. I mean, what a time for Texas basketball program when Blanks was calling the games for UT and Terry became the head coach. It just, Gerald, doing this podcast with one of my best friends, with you, it's, you know, it's a tremendous joy to be able to do the things you love with the people you love. And so I can just imagine how Coach Terry is feeling at this moment as well. Just huge hug, you know, arms out, embracing all of Longhorn Nation. I know it's tough for a person who is utterly universally beloved, and just goes to remind you, like his daughter said in her and her really thoughtful piece, it's it can be the titans in your life. It can be the people who seem larger than life, who seem like everything's fine, who, you know, who are going through it as well. And so stop and tell someone you love them. Give them a hug. If you're listening to this and, you know, you have even the slightest bit of thought that you aren't loved, it doesn't matter if you're here. Just know, you know, you have two podcast listeners who care and who have open DMs, as we've said many times, and may not be the most important person in your life, but it's for ears that are willing to listen and just know that you're not disconnected, as disconnected as we all feel in our modern world.
It's a good reminder that you never know what people are going through mentally, emotionally, spiritually. So when given the choice, choose kindness. Hug your loved ones, hug your family, hug your friends. Never miss an opportunity to tell people that you love them, because you never know when it will be your last. A moment of silence and horns up for Lance Blanks and his family. Welcome everybody to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built in. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends where you found it, whether it was Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere where you find fine podcast content. You can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, the Longhorn Republic, or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. My name is Gerald Goodinger, my host this week, like I am every week, and I'm joined by a man who has yet to be flagged for gambling irregularities, Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
I seem to be the last person involved with college athletics, as loosely as I can say we're involved, that hasn't been flagged for it. Look, you know, we on this very podcast have been sponsored by various gambling sites. My bookie, I won't say the full name unless you want to sponsor us again, and others. Feel free to come back with the with the endorsements and the advertisements. We'll take you. But it is an odd tipping point of. I wonder if this is what causes some legislation to happen in what's been a bit of a Wild West situation in college sports the past couple of years. As it seemed like rules didn't apply, and then people found out, hey, you still can't bet on your own games with a rash of those occurring over the past, I don't know, what week? It feels like there's been four stories come out.
You've had Alabama, for sure, Iowa, and Iowa State. And I'm sure there's another one in there that I'm missing. Part of the issue is like the NCAA's rules on betting are super restrictive. So if you don't know, the NCAA's rules on betting are pretty simple, that if the NCAA sponsors the sport, an NCAA athlete cannot place a bet. So that means that your average tennis player cannot put a bet on the Super Bowl or something like that. So it's pretty restrictive. So it's really easy to violate those rules. Obviously, the NCAA and like their stance has been like, just don't bet on it, has always been there. Like, it's been that way since like the 80s from what I've read and seen. So like, I'm assuming and I'm hoping what comes out of this really is like the NCAA changing and relaxing some of their, like, I'm fine with college athletes not betting on college sports. I think that's fair because, you know, you're in the dorms with some of these other athletes. So you'll know, oh yeah, that guy's not playing on Saturday. Let me put some money on it. But like not being able to participate in that, one of the largest growing industries in the United States, when the NCAA's largest TV partner, ESPN, does against the spread betting during its big pregame show like every week. Like, it just seems ridiculous to me.
There is an interesting double standard. And like I said, sports betting generally is an interesting business. It's becoming more legitimized as a lot of walls historically are breaking down. It will be curious to see what stays, what goes, and what remains verboten. But interesting times nonetheless.
Very interesting times indeed. Speaking of interesting times, baseball went to Larry, Kansas, and got a series win, positioning themselves to make a run at first place in the conference. At the start of a 7-game homestand, so we'll talk about that. The tennis teams making it interesting in Austin this weekend, setting themselves up for a run to Florida for the NCAA tournament. Softball did not keep it interesting and had a really terrible weekend. Very, very upset with that. We'll obviously close the show out with some BOL and some tangential Longhorn things. Godzillatron, and we'll bang the drum. So like we mentioned, the baseball team went to Lawrence. The weekend started off poorly. Lucas Gordon picked up his first loss of the year, but Texas rebounded thanks to an unlikely starting pitching outing. Like, I'll just be honest, LeBaron Johnson did not expect that performance from him this weekend, but crushed it, earned himself some awards for that. But Texas gutted it out on Sunday, 7-6, to get the series win, setting themselves up. There's an opportunity for Texas to get that top spot in the Big 12. Some things have to break their way, but they're taking care of business on their end.
Yeah, and Gerald, I just am shocked at the fact that you're shocked. Everyone knows, as the Texas baseball Twitter account tweeted out, the alphabet goes LBJPOTW. That's LeBaron Johnson Player of the Week for those uninitiated with the acronym side of the world. Really, he's been quite good for a while. He's been quietly quite good for a while. He currently now leads the Big 12 after this weekend, basically, in ERA for those qualified with a 2.53. Lucas Gordon is second with a 2.65. Gordon was the original leader, but after, you know, giving up a few runs in that Friday. Look, Lucas and Larry, while it sounds like a children's book, just wasn't as easy on the eyes or ears as we hoped. A sweep would have been nice for what this team, you know, still has in front of them. A win was needed. A sweep was a nice to have. They got the win, the series win, and that's what's important. And look, right, I would have loved to get that Friday one, but credit to the team for battling back after losing that. Everything could have gone off the rails. The steadying kind of influence that LeBaron Johnson had for the starting piece, and then, you know, the team battling both Saturday and Sunday and making it happen. I think they showed a little grit, a little bit of gut. Kansas, as we said, towards the bottom of the Big 12, but it's just a year of parity in this year's conference, so you can't take anyone for granted.
Yeah, I mean, the Big 12, I'm tired of saying this about sports, but like the Big 12 has just been a weird knife fight this year. Like, Kansas is not a great team, but they came up and surprised Texas on Friday and the bats blew up, right? Like, it's just been such a weird, not weird year, but it's just been kind of emblematic of, I think the Big 12 has done this thing across all sports, really, where like the floor of the Big 12 has been raised pretty significantly. And we're seeing that now in baseball, right? We saw it in football. We've seen it in basketball. And now we're seeing it in baseball and softball, where the floor is being raised slowly but surely. And so, you know, a team like Kansas, who, you know, has been not great-ish all year, they've had some really surprising wins. And I think Friday was one of those. It was a bad outing, a rare bad outing from Lucas Gordon, kind of led us there. But, I mean, we really have to talk about LeBaron Johnson on Saturday. Like, that's the story to me. I mean, you and I have both said on this podcast, and I know I have said that I, going into this year, did not have a ton of faith in the Texas staff, and LeBaron Johnson was kind of a walking home run for a couple of weeks last season and early, you know. And so I just seeing him come out and like gut it out and, you know, shrug off the four hits, and he struck out 12 of like the 27 batters he faced or something like that. Just absolutely just clutch performance. Really, really incredible outing from him. Leads the Big 12, like you said, in ERA at 2.53. And then like that fourth inning from Texas to put up all of those runs, all six of them. They went up 6-0 in the fourth. Like, you know, DC like extended his streak with a leadoff home run, and then two outs later, Texas just strung together a bunch of small ball to get him there, and then capped it off with an RBI triple to go up 6-0. Like, that was, I think, one of the most complete games we've seen from Texas in quite a while. And like, if that's what they can put together moving forward, again, we did not see that on Sunday, but if that's what they can do, if that's the standard, then I think this is a team, like, if they can find that level of consistency, if Coach Pierce can get them there, I like what they can do.
Speaking of consistency, you mentioned it, but Dylan Campbell, let's not gloss over. After a year where Ivan Melendez was named the best player in college baseball, and Texas was just blasting home runs and setting all kinds of home run records, Melendez, of course, having multiple records set in home runs in the entire college baseball during the BB Corps era, but we knew that it would be a different offensive team. We said in the beginning, Dylan Campbell is the guy. He's the one, you know, we know he's the known entity who's returning. We think he can take a step up. I mean, give credit where it's due for the second straight season, a record-setting performance from the bats. This one different, of course, than just launching a home run basically every four at-bats or so. But, you know, really incredible. Like you said, broke the record with a leadoff double or a double in the first inning. He's had now 27 consecutive games. The record at 26 extended to 27. Broke Michael Torres's record 2008. The Big 12 record is 31. We'll see. Keep an eye on that. Right. I imagine that extends into the postseason if that becomes relevant for national records. We'll see. Not jinxing anything. But during the streak, when you talk about consistency, Gerald, he's hit 396 with 8 doubles, 2 triples, 4 home runs, 19 RBIs, 26 runs scored, 12 stolen bases. He's been everything this team needed him to be as kind of the returning leader. Now, there's been two new guys who stepped up and instantly brought, you know, I think Garrett Gilmett's been solid in that cleanup spot, and we said, how do you replace Silas Ardoin? Well, Gilmett does it a lot more vocally and a lot more with the bat, but you've seen that happen. Porter Brown instantly coming in and being a contributor. You've seen some guys really step up, and look, the pitching, I think they're still lead the Big 12, and I think they're top 20 in the nation in ERA. There's some wobbles, right? The Sunday game, it got too close. I would have loved to not have to worry. This team loves to give you a heart attack, but they won it. If that's what we're seeing at the end of the season, where there's some wobbles, but they figure it out. Zane Morehouse got hit with double comebackers to knock him out of the game, which is such a tough way to go out. But things are going to happen, right? You're going to have a pitcher knocked out. You're going to have someone else need to step up. Ace Whitehead got his first career save. Like, this team, I'm liking where they're at, right? I like... They're not a perfect team. They're not a team that will be easy to watch. It's going to be stress. You're going to grind and grit your teeth watching this team. But they're a fun team, and I'm really liking kind of where they're at as we head into this final couple weeks of the regular season.
Yeah, the regular season is coming to a close. Texas currently playing UT Arlington to kick off a 7-game home stand. They're currently up 8-2. They'll have a weekend series against San Jose State. And then next week, Thursday through Saturday, they'll have a series against West Virginia. They need some other things to break in their favor, but Texas getting all three against West Virginia would be nice because that would put them in position for the top seed in the Big 12. So now it's the part of the show where we whip around the rest of campus and we down the 40. And we'll start with some teams that are making runs at NCAA championships. Number one men's tennis at the NCAA tournament hosting in Austin swept Texas A&M, Corpus Christi, and Pepperdine, setting up a matchup this weekend with number 14 North Carolina in Austin.
Yeah, win sends them where they want to be, Lake Nona, Florida. For the championship, take on the winner of South Carolina and Tennessee. The other side of the bracket there, they're looking at Ohio State. Remember, that's the new rivalry between these teams that seem to always find each other in postseason. Just keep an eye on that. But Ohio State, Arizona, Harvard, UGA on the other side of the bracket. Texas really, really well positioned here. Spazieri looking like the number one player. They look strong top to bottom. I like it. I like where this team is. You know, this is... The women are the two-time reigning national champions, but don't forget the men won their first ever in 2019, and Bruce Burke is still there and has them still competing, and this looks and smells like the formula, so let's see if they can keep it going.
Picking up steam in the right time on the ladies' side as well, take on and sweep both Texas A&M, Corpus Christi, and San Diego, also in Austin this weekend.
And also next, Pepperdine, as the men beat them, the women take them on number 9 on the ladies' side at home. A win sends them to Lake Nona, Florida, to take on the winner of North Carolina and Florida. Other side of the bracket in that one, NC State, who did get a late-season win against Texas, so maybe a little retribution there. Auburn, Iowa State, always nice to beat Iowa State at any given time, and UCLA round out the rest of the bracket on their side. This team is different with no Peyton Stearns, as we've said all year, but they're playing as a team. They have a lot of heart. They're tough to beat top to bottom. Without a superstar leading them, they're a team of really strong stars. No superstars, but stars all the way through. So young, talented, and who knows, looking to get a three-peat. I like that both coach and player said it's not a three-peat because most of this team wasn't here for the first one or even the last one, right? It's a one-peat we're going for this year. We want to win it, which I think is the right perspective, and I like where they're at.
Simultaneously act like you've been there before and act like you haven't been there before. Places that we haven't been in a long time. Number 5, softball, swept by the Baylor Bears, kicked off by a 9-1 5-inning run rule, the first run rule this side of the year 2000 for the Bears over the Longhorns. Saturday was not much better, 5-2 win, and then Sunday a controversial ending in that one, but Texas lost that one 2-1 on a walk-off weird situation.
Yeah, Texas has had like a lot of really odd walk-off last minute things going on, that Sunday one, right? I don't know. It just feels like Texas has had a decent amount of that. Baylor's looked like a, you know, we've said they've increased the profile of the Big 12 this year with, you know, legitimately a top 20 team. You just saw what they did to Texas. I mean, who's to say that they're not a top 10 team right now to go with Texas and the two Oklahoma schools? Baylor's Riley Crandall, who's pitching as good as any pitcher in the country, and again, that includes the aces at Oklahoma State and OU, was phenomenal in the Friday and Sunday games, just phenomenal. Combined 14 innings, gave up only 10 hits and 2 runs across the two games. She shut down a Texas offense that, while young, has been just consistent. I mentioned before they were trying to set a school record for best batting average on the season, right? And that's a tough way to go down at the end there. I believe Crandall also came in the Saturday game to close it out one inning and did give up one run in that one. So she gave up one run scattered across each of these games, but two of them were 7-inning one-run performances. So she's looking to fill out that league. You know, it makes people's ballots for first team a little bit tougher because she looks made a strong statement to close the season out. But Texas, not a strong statement. They got their 200th win for the coach, Mike White, and their 40th win of the season in the midweek game. Would have loved to add to all of those numbers, at least one of them against Baylor. A sweep to Baylor just hurts.
So, yeah, Texas will open up the Big 12 tournament against Texas Tech on Thursday, tomorrow, as you're listening to it, in Oklahoma City. Number 10 women's golf tied for fourth going into the final round of the Palm Beach Regional. The top five will advance. Texas is one shot from third and one shot ahead of sixth. So they need a solid final round, just hold serve in that. On the men's side, the men have earned the 3 seed in the East Lansing Regional, which will kick off May 15th through the 17th.
Yeah, the women all look strong. All the golfers currently top 50. Angela Hill leading them, at tied for eighth in the individual stats there. But yeah, just hold steady. Like they were first round fourth, second round fourth. The people around them have gone up and down and moved. If they could just hold steady another round and stay in fourth, I'll be good with it. Just survive and advance.
And then finally, just something to keep an eye on this weekend. The 12th of May, Texas Track will begin the Big 12 Championships in Norman, hoping to avenge, I think is the right way, the indoor season and hopefully start their run at a national championship.
Yeah, they're well positioned, especially on the women's side. Number one still in the latest ranking, no change this week. Number eight, I believe, on the men's side. So a lot of chance for them to get a sweep here for men's and women's. A couple things have to go right on the men's side, and nothing needs to go astoundingly, crazily wrong on the women's side. But add a few more Director's Cup points and a few more Big 12 titles to the crowded trophy case for track this weekend. All right, Gerald, let's take a look at the world now through some burnt orange lenses. Let's start with watch list season, an award that we like every year, the Ronnie Lott Impact Trophy watch list. Jalen Ford, Texas is leading, I believe, tackles for loss, interceptions, did it all last year. And we're expecting if this team takes a step up, it's because he takes a step up or at least holds steady as being that dominant presence on the defense. So Jalen Ford, we'll talk as we get into our season previews and everything, but maybe as important to the success of this team as any one player on it going forward.
Yeah, I mean, Texas, we weren't sure he was going to be back. Obviously, I think we were confident he would be, but he went and got an NFL evaluation. Texas, linebacker is becoming a strength for them, and so him getting that national recognition is great. He's earned it, and really capital. Like, he was a developmental guy and took the development well, and Coach Kwiatkowski and his crew got him up and running. And he's gone from a 1,000 recruit to a guy who's going to have a huge. If he has a big senior year, could hear his name called in the NFL draft.
Yeah, absolutely. We had another linebacker in Diamante Tucker Dorson on here who may have had a slightly better. From whatever number 999999 whatever unranked recruit, at least Jalen Ford was a guy who people had heard of a little bit in high school. But truly, this is a testament to development there on that side. But another former Texas defensive player, feel good story, Gerald. Peter Podgy graduated this weekend, and I like you put this one in the notes because we need a good heartstring, good feel good story.
Yeah, I mean, he was a guy who came in and was a pretty highly sought after athlete, and a freak, heart condition during a medical evaluation ended his football career, needed a heart transplant, doing well, doing healthy. And I think it's really cool that Texas kept him on scholarship and he got to wear like the student athlete stole when he graduated. Like, just great to hear stuff like that. Like, absolutely. Just so excited for him and his family.
You know, it's hard to follow programs outside of UT to the depth and that we follow UT, and I'm sure other programs have this, but man, the list of some of the could have been athletes, between with freak injuries, Darian Brown to Gabriel Floyd, obviously Matt Nader in our times, a five-star all everything offensive lineman who never really got to play with it, also with a heart thing. So it's crazy when you look at these specimens that they're human as well. And you know, I'm glad we both A, take it seriously, catch those things, because life is way more important than sport, but also love when you see Texas, you know, use its resources basically to honor these guys and pay for their school and let them continue to like Tuck talked about when he came on our program, right? Like you commit to UT, you know, not just for your college career, but for what the 30 to 60 years after it can mean for you. So what starts here changes the world. Love that. Seeing those guys graduate and move on. Guys who are graduating and moving on. Isaac Pearson is transferring to SMU, but as a graduate, he also graduated. Really impressed with our guy, former guest of this podcast, former friend of this, or still friend of this podcast.
Always a friend of the show.
Graduated in 2.5 years with a 4-year degree as a 26-year-old. we can joke. But, you know, incredible. Good for him. Coming in late by all accounts, right? And leaving early. That's how I'd like my work day to look. But Pearson's still got a little work to do himself, continuing the pipeline of Longhorns making their way up to SMU and hopefully, you know, carving out a nice little end of his career season up there.
I mean, Garrett Gilbert turned it into a Super Bowl ring, so we can only hope he has that level of success. But, I mean, you know, Isaac Pearson, he's a guy, it just didn't work out for him at Texas, and that happens. But, you know, we love that guy. He's super awesome. Like, we, you know, DM, and like we said, he's been on the podcast, and, you know, flexed his beautiful Australian backyard on us one time. So, like, just a really cool dude. Like, we wish the best for him. Like, glad he's landed at a place and gets to stay in the great state of Texas. It seems like he likes it here.
Yeah, I mean, Chris Nagger turned it into the Jets. I think he was kicking for them because he did both punting and kicking, but did the UT to SMU pipeline, I think is the most direct correlation as Pearson as a specialist will be following him. But not necessarily a specialist, but a special player, a guy we loved back in his time on the 40 acres. The original Shark, not to be confused with the most recent Jameson varietal, the McCullough. The OG of the 2000s Sharks, still doing his thing. Scored a defensive touchdown for the USL Memphis Showboats, and showboat a bit he did, rightfully so.
Much earned, and it's cool. Like, I'm loving seeing all of these other leagues. Like, they're not the NFL, but like seeing the USFL and the XFL letting these guys play some more football. A guy from the USFL actually got a camp invite to the Miami Dolphins. So, like, you know, if you play well enough in these leagues, there's an opportunity for you to at least continue to try to chase your NFL dream. So I'm glad to see Shark is getting to do that.
NBA playoffs are getting to the good stuff where honestly every play matters. It's down to the nitty and or gritty. Of the four series remaining, each East and West has a 2-2 and a 3-1. Unfortunately, Texas is on the one of the 3-1 side in the Miami New York series for Jericho Sims. There, the 2-2 Eastern Conference series features Boston versus PJ Tucker's Philadelphia 76ers, so we're all rooting for the 76ers there, of course. Denver versus Phoenix is the one that's interesting to me, a 2-2 game. One of the if you're not watching the NBA playoffs, just watch that one. It's interesting stuff going on there. Kevin Durant is averaging 30 points a game in the playoffs. He's been, you know, phenomenal. I think he's shooting 50% from the field, 94% from free throw, doing what he does, averaging 9 rebounds to go with his 30 points. Devin Booker is unbelievable. They don't have much of a bench, so it's really those two guys. Can they get to like 85, 90 a night between them? And then what can they do with the rest of the team against a good, really, really good Nuggets team? So that's the one, obviously, I think most Longhorn fans are tuning in. Durant still looking amazing out there, but you have to think, you know, does he have another 7 years in his career? Who knows, right? These playoff runs are valuable. And then finally, the Lakers took a 3-1 lead over Golden State. That's the Tristan Thompson and Mo Bamba-led Lakers. But actually, funnily enough, it was a former Spur in Lonnie Walker who dueled Steph Curry 15 points in the fourth quarter to get them, I think it was a 2-point win in there, to go up 3-1. So unexpected guys could show up. You know, who knows if Mo Bamba is going to throw down a game-winning alley-oop or something. We'll see. But Lakers versus Phoenix is what you're rooting for in the West for the maximum Longhorns, and then for them to play Philadelphia, one of those two teams, to keep a Longhorn in it to the end. All right, keeping it on the hardwood, the newest members of the Texas basketball fraternity, those who are yet to play on campus, but two transfer portal announcements this week, moments after each other. Their visit came together, their commitment did the same. We'll start, I guess, with the smaller of the two. UT Arlington point guard / combo guard Chandal Weaver has transferred to Texas. The 6'3 guard averaged 9.5 and 4.6 rebounds coming from UT Arlington. And then in the paint, UTEP power forward Zerick Onyema also announced on the same day.
When you said smaller of the two, you meant physical stature, not necessarily
correct.
Smaller time of them. I mean, 6'8 to 6'3, right? Onyema was a big get for Texas because, like, you know, Tech, Ole Miss, Vandy, like, those are teams that are trying to, you know, build and stack talent. And Texas obviously needs that. So they're number 11, I think, in the portal classes, according to 247. But, like, Rodney Terry still has a little bit of work to do in the portal, and I think this is going to be a team that's mostly made up of portal guys and Brock Cunningham. So it's going to be curious to see what it looks like and who we can cheer for next year.
Yeah, you're going to be expecting Ace Miss, as we talked about last week, to, you know, continuous 20 points a night would be nice, so that you're not reliant on each of these guys coming in and you know, increasing and getting double digits from where they were in a you know, admittedly weaker conferences. But I do like, one, the idea of UT just gets to pick the best players in the UT system. So if there's a player on a UT SA, UT EP, UT Arlington, etc., we just, you know, at the end of the season go and collect them like a farm team. I only half kid. The other is, I think you're right. They should have a starting center, probably a starting two of their starting guards here, it looks like, will likely be. And we'll see if Zerick is a starter. I think he's more of a off-the-bench guy, but really twitchy, kind of 6'8", but can leap out of the building. His highlights are actually fun because he does a lot of, like, jumping up and grabbing rebounds and then dunking over guys, which is great. We'll take some of that. But they're building a bigger front court with Dessou coming back, with the center from Virginia, and now with the power forward from UTEP. But the other thing is all of there's some depth. I think at least 2 years for all these guys. And in fact, I believe Weaver has 3 years of eligibility. So hopefully it means they don't have to immediately portal just as much next year. But we shall see. Thus is the new state of play. Gerald, let's send it on home with our final segment. What have you been watching on your giant screen? Time for a little Godzillatron.
First of all, I'm really upset that you didn't say we will see thus is the new reality. You really missed an opportunity there. Mm. But it's fine. It's okay. We'll let it slide. So Godzillatron, it was a weird week for me. My wife and I are on the tail end of, like, getting our house ready to sell and all of that. And so didn't have a whole lot of time to stream stuff. May the 4th, I did watch Empire Strikes Back, as is tradition for me. Empire Strikes Back is my hands down favorite Star Wars movie. It's just incredible. It's great. Does everything that Star Wars does really well, does it really well. And then, kind of as I turn my brain off, wind down, on Saturday night, I tuned in to WWE's SummerSlam. And you know what? It's great. Like, WWE puts on spectacle, and I don't have to think about a darn thing when I'm watching it. Like, and if you don't have 6 hours a week to dedicate to keep up with, like, with everything going on Raw and SmackDown and all that, they do these beautiful, like, 10-minute, like, here's all of the things you need to know to understand the storyline heading into this match. So, like, you don't have to watch any of it. They just do this, like, quick trailer of, like, Cody Rhodes and Brock Lesnar, you know, screaming at each other and having these little matches, and then they have a longer match. And it was headlined. They say headlined. The main event was not, but it was held in Puerto Rico. And Bad Bunny, the Puerto Rican rap sensation, who is actually a massive WWE fan, like, makes references to WWE wrestlers in his song, had Ric Flair in a song and a music video, like, in, you know, 2017 or something like that. But he actually had what a lot of people are saying is the best match of the night. It was super fun to watch. Like, they dug up the Latino World Order, and they had, like, Rey Mysterio out there doing stuff, and it was super fun. And I've been listening to painful, not a painful amount, but an embarrassing amount of Bad Bunny music since then, which means that it was a marketing success for him as well. Proud to report that I know more Spanish than I give myself credit for. I'm ashamed to report that most of it is the cuss words, but you know what? You take the good, you take the bad, right?
That's amazing. First of all, Bad Bunny doesn't need yours or my streams. That man is, like, I always forget. I occasionally will do the Spotify, like, who's the most stream? Who's in the top 10? And, like, you just always underestimate Bad Bunny. That guy does numbers.
The world's most streamed artist. He literally is.
That's correct. He's also the world's probably only person who is both a Spotify top artist, a WWE guest star, and played a role as a hitman in Bullet Train, which
true triple threat.
Gerald and I have both cut for on this very podcast. So this was kind of a spread out. I didn't go deep in anything this week. I caught up, started some new seasons of some new things. I am in current with Succession. I'll save it up because we're so close to the end, and I know Gerald hasn't watched caught up yet, but it's just good as it always is this week. And then started and caught up. I think they've released like 6 episodes of Marvelous Miss Maisel, which I think is just a super underrated show. I don't think enough people cut for that specific show. If you have Amazon Prime, it's included with your subscription, and it's probably one of the 2 or 3 best things on that streaming service. Just really good. They're closing out the show this season, so it's got a little bit of time jumps, and sometimes people struggle with that, but I kind of like the way they're doing it. And then Gerald, I think you are further ahead than me on this, but I started Ted Lasso. Just watched the first episode. I don't remember what my wife did, but when we were in Charleston last weekend, she's somehow, I think it was connected to our Uber, said, "Hey, I got a free month of Apple TV again." So we're now watching our third time of a free month of Apple TV to watch Ted Lasso. We will also catch any other Apple TV recommendations. So hit me on Twitter with your best Apple TV recommendations. But I'll wait to catch up to you before we talk Ted Lasso, because I am curious to hear your thoughts, but I'm only one episode in.
Apple TV recommendation. Once you're done with Ted Lasso, watch Shrinking.
Yeah.
Do it.
Yeah, will do. Absolutely. That's my next one on my list.
So that brings us to the part of the show where we honor one of the best traditions in all of college athletics, Big Bertha, and we bang the drum, brought to you by Joe Ruiz. So Kyle, what are you banging the drum on this week?
Gerald, I'm going to start with a little bit of rat poison. This week has felt like, I believe when Barack came to campus for a debate when I was there, he called it political silly season that was going on. This is the sporting, the football equivalent of that. It's football silly season. Everyone's pretty much, you know, wrapped up their spring games. We're about to head into summer with people graduating and classes coming to an end. And I don't know if that just the air getting warmer across the country or what gets people all amped up, but it feels like around this time wild takes just start flying. The wilder the better to get you viral and clicks, and I've been hurt before, and Nick Saban has a term for this type of fodder. It's rat poison. But some things have been said about Texas. There was a prediction that came out of Texas in the college football playoff. I think it was ESPN who had that as the number 3 ranked team playing Ohio State in the playoff, which is, I've been hurt before. I'm not willing to drink the Kool-Aid yet. Give me a couple more hype videos in a couple more months. Urban Meyer said, "Don't sleep on Texas. May have the man-for-man best roster in the country again." Urban, I don't need that. Don't you put that evil on me, Ricky Bobby. I think Quinn Ewers have seen in mock drafts, you know, way too early mock drafts going anywhere from 6 to 16. You know, that one I don't hate. But still, you know, that also seen him in some Heisman odds. Like, it's, we need to prove it, right? It tonight, actually, the Texas tour where they travel to different cities, Texas Fight Tour, was in Gerald and I hometown of San Antonio on Tuesday. And there were 2 things that are relevant to this story. One, Chris Del Conte asked the Texas fans online boo the coaches and him, but let the athletes know you love them, be nice. So saying these nice things about them maybe sets people up for the next step where they don't achieve all of this, and then people say mean things. So don't tweet at Kruitz or mean things at current players. But the other thing was Steve Sarkisian started by apologizing to the city of San Antonio about the Alamo Bowl. Like, don't forget, last year we were in the Alamo Bowl, a very good Alamo Bowl team. truly, against Washington, and they were close with it. But remember, it's a little bit of grounding, right? Like, let's start with, you know, we should at least be, you know, above an Alamo Bowl, because he said, great to be there, hope we're not back for a while, which I like. That's the right mentality. Let's be above an Alamo Bowl, but let's maybe temper just a little bit of the guaranteed college football playoff or bust for the season. Expectations a little high.
The expectations are probably a little high. I think this is a team that, if they live up to the ceiling, I think these things are all within the realm of possibility, but we also don't know what the floor is, I think, in a lot of ways. I think, you know, you and I have gone on record and said that we think Texas the expectation, I think a fair expectation for this team should be a trip to Arlington and probably walking away with that trophy. But, you know, there's a lot, you know, Texas is, I think, the odds-on favorite to win the Big 12 this year. I think they're ahead of OU. I think it's Texas and OU at 1-2, according to the most recent lines. But none of it matters until they strap on pads, like the game isn't played on paper. So I think Texas has an opportunity. Once again, we've said that for several years, and I think they've got a ton of talent. The offensive line, the defensive line are finally in the shape that they need to be. So there's openings there for Texas. It's going to be an interesting season, and I'm excited to get it started. We're like 115 days away or something like that. So I'm banging the drum this week on Texas quarterbacks and just the incessant need to drum up controversy using the Longhorn. So for like the second week this month, people have been churning out stories about Malik Murphy and people reaching out to him in the portal and him staying and blah, 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 blah. And it boils down to, like, he knows that Sark is developing him well, and he's going to have an opportunity, likely, if all goes according to plan, to compete for the number one spot next year. Like, it makes complete sense for that kid to stay. Like, he's the number two quarterback. Quinn Ewers got injured last year, so he is an injury away from being the number one guy at Texas, and we've seen what he can do. And then this afternoon, a troll account on Twitter drummed up a lot of idiots who didn't know it was a troll account, that Arch Manning was going to enter the transfer portal because he's QB number three in a couple of weeks. And I want to let you know a couple of things. One, I know rich people live different lives than we do, but I'm 99% sure the Mannings don't have a time machine because the portal closed like 10 days ago, so can't do that. The earliest he'll be able to do that is postseason, so we'll be dealing with that. But it just goes to show you the thing that we've said on this podcast. We've said it before. We'll say it again. Whenever even Texas is good, Texas is bad, Texas moves the needle. And if you didn't hear, if you weren't here last week, if you didn't listen to last week's show, go back and listen to it. Ryan Nanny of the Shutdown Fullcast had some interesting perspectives on why people are interested in Texas and why people lean in on Texas. And when push comes to shove, you know, whether you're laughing at us or whether you're laughing with us or whether you're cheering for us, you know, I think back to what the national conversation was like that first half of the Bama game when Quinn Ewers was dealing and Texas looked like they were going to roast Bama. People were behind Texas. And so I really am, I say all that to say this, like, regardless of what happens, regardless of where Texas is moving the needle. They'll continue to move the needle. And, like, just quit giving idiots clicks.
Yeah, I think that's a really great social media maxim for our time. Quit giving idiots clicks.
Except for us.
We are lovable idiots, and we're well-intentioned idiots. When we troll, it's gentle, petty trolling of rival fan bases. You know, it's a much... a much less malicious endeavor. Don't tweet at Kreutz. Tweet only nice things at your own players, and you know, don't feed the trolls.
And that's all we got for you this week. Kyle, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
Oh, you can find me trolling folks at Kyle Carpenter on Twitter. You can also follow the Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer.
You follow me on Twitter. I am at GH Goodridge. Follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. Facebook and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic, or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. Thank you so much for tuning in again this week, and until next week, hook 'em.
Hook 'em. It's Big 12 and national title season, baby.